I am the daughter of 9-time Academy Award-winning film composer Alfred Newman, who wrote the 20th Century Fox fanfare, which is, you know, dun da 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 da. So that's how a lot of people still know him, because that is still, you know, really prevalent in the movie theaters nowadays, and especially on reruns and that kind of thing. So I thought people would know from there. And from there, I have some very famous uncles who also were Academy Award winners. And then my first cousin, which you might not know because of the age disparity, but Randy Newman is my first cousin. And of course, brilliant, from a man who speaks to the most elite of musicians and at the same time is a complete household name, who has taken an Americana sound and completely made it his own through film music and, of course, his brilliant satirical and love songs as well. So Randy Newman. And then two of my brothers are very big in film music. Thomas Newman, who wrote Shawshank Redemption, the music to Shawshank Redemption, American Beauty, Finding Nemo. My brother David Newman, who is currently traveling the world like crazy, conducting all of these film, say Star Wars, all the Star Wars and Jurassic Park, and to live orchestras such as New York Philharmonic, Los Angeles Philharmonic. He's now in Europe, so he also has is an Academy Award nominated composer for his music to Anastasia. So coming from this family, and of course when we were all little, they're quite a bit older than me, but when we were all little, you know, nobody had sort of attained that sort of, I guess I should just say, fame. So I didn't really know, but they were still my big brothers and very intense, and was absolutely wonderful to have them around and at the same time terrifying. So as the youngest of five children, that grew up in the same house together, I was, you know, embattled sort of with my brothers as to, you know, you need to play more in tune, you need to do this. They were always on me, which was both good and, of course, caused sort of a, you know, lapse in confidence for me. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, what was life like in your house? Like, was there music? Were people making music, like on average Wednesday night after dinner, like homework, practicing? What was the scene?
That's a really good question. Do you know that when I was really little, we had the Hollywood String Quartet and people like Yasha Heifetz, who might just come over for a soiree in the Newman house? And our house, by the way, we have this connection, if you can sort of visually put yourself in the connection that we have with the Frank Lloyd Wright family of architects. So I grew up in a Frank Lloyd Wright Jr. home in Pacific Palisades, which is a suburb of Los Angeles. And from then, I actually built my own Lloyd Wright home by the grandson, Eric Lloyd Wright. So if you could sort of see us in that warm, rich, in terms of amber colors and greens and bringing the outside in and music just going on at all times. So growing up in that household was obviously scintillating, but also, you know, you realize you really had something to live up to. It was nothing you were going to do without going in full force. So, yes, inspirational, hearing my brothers practice, practicing on my own.
So you came to Rochester to go to the Eastman School of Music. And what happened? Why was it transformational for you? How did you, you know, what did it do for you?
Well, okay. Eastman, I had heard of because of course, its incredible reputation as a music school, and also because the Cleveland Quartet was here in residence at the time. And chamber music, of course, I think so many of us, we in music love chamber music and would love, of course, to do this for a living. And having that opportunity to study with such great faculty artists was just too much for me to give up. So when I auditioned and was accepted to Eastman, I ran here as fast as I could. And really tried to stay out of composition, which was a very large force in my family, tried to stay out of that for a long time.
That Why?
I was intimidated. So, and also I love concert music so much. And my family had, whether they wanted to or not, had fallen into to film music, which is a great craft in and of itself, but was something that I wasn't sure that I wanted to do. So when I came to Eastman, I came as a performance major and studied as hard as I could, took advantage of all of the amazing opportunities that Eastman has to offer. And I hope that because of Eastman's support, I became, even as a young student, a bit of an entrepreneur in setting up and producing outside concerts and concert tours with my colleagues from school and beyond.
Was that unusual at the time?
You know, I'm not sure, because all of the people that I collaborated with were as excited as I was. I'm not sure any of them went into the sort of production and entrepreneurial field that I went into. Some of them went into great orchestras that already existed, or they fell into, or I should say they didn't fall into, they earned amazing teaching positions. But certainly at the time, maybe it was just our excitement together, being in this place that created fireworks in all of us to make something of ourselves.
What gave you the confidence to compose for yourself? And tell us about the piece that's being premiered this week here in Rochester.
Absolutely. Well, I did not want to compose because I was intimidated, as I was telling you. So when I was here at Eastman, I played in, I don't know, I'm a gypsy style person, I suppose you would say, hopefully in the best sense of the word, I don't know. But I loved the idea that music was there to move you, to move a listener, to move the player. And I did receive a lot of peer criticism for maybe going a little too overboard in some interpretations of existing masterworks, you know, Bach or Beethoven or Tchaikovsky or whatever.
Like you were too into it.
I was too, yeah, it was maybe I did too many portamenti in Bach. It was, you don't slide in Bach. You have to make it like clockwork, you know. So I decided I was going to write my own music because nobody would be able to tell me how to play my own music. It didn't mean I left any other music out, of course. So I did, but I wrote under a pseudonym for a long time. I was afraid of being a woman in composition. Also, at that time, to be both a player and a composer, I wondered if anybody would take me seriously on either front. So I sort of hid it. I used my great-grandmother's, actually, maiden name, but I used it with initials. And after a while, her name was Mary Lewis Parker, and I used M, period, Lewis, which was Lewis Parker. And after a while, people wanted to know too much about M. Lewis Parker, which I suppose is a good thing. And I came out of the composition closet and started writing under my own name of Maria Newman, and it went from there. And one last thing about composition is that because I was a player and had so many wonderful colleagues, etc., in music, my music was beautifully disseminated amongst them. So I was able to garner commissions, and existing works were reperformed by many different people, and that's a real blessing and a dream come true.
Well, do tell us about the piece that you've written that's going to be played for the first time here in Rochester this week, right?
This week, exactly. I have been very lucky to have been able to play many of my existing pieces here this year in Rochester, and I'm very excited, especially about Nicholas Galusis, the incredible guitar faculty, artist faculty at Eastman School of Music, who is one of the greatest human beings I think I've ever met. He is kind. He is a mentor. He is an artist's artist, a musician's musician. And we've been working together actually because of Eastman School of Music in Los Angeles. So we had started doing some concerts together as a collaboration on the other side of our continent. And we became very good friends. And he asked me to write a piece for him. Now he's asked me to write a guitar concerto, by the way. So that's for the future. We'll talk about that later. Right now, this piece is for solo guitar. And the piece is a sonata in three movements, but it also has a subtitle called Storge. Now, Nicholas has Greek ancestry, and Storge means familial love. And so for the three movements, which are quite contrasting and in many points very virtuosic, others very lullaby-esque, Nicholas is bringing this three-movement work off to a grand beginning. So we perform, or I should say we, I'm not, he's the one playing, but the first premiere performance is Wednesday night in Hatch Hall, and the September 11th actually is part of a concert that is called In Remembrance, and it is a tribute to courage and heroism and hope for the future, not only on that very important date in our country's history, but of course throughout the world and everywhere past, present, and I am very sorry to say future. I'm hoping that our world will be able to heal, and maybe music is the way to bring that across.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then Nicholas will perform it again on his faculty concert, his faculty recital, which is on the 12th of September, the very next day, in Hatch Hall as well, along with music of the great masters.
What did you love about writing for guitar? What was enjoyable about it?
the resonance in guitar is exceptional. You can live on a note for moments at a time. So not only does it appear facile, I can't claim to say I know that if it actually feels facile when you're playing it. It's a very difficult instrument, but the way Nicholas brings both the agility of the guitar, the fact that you can allude to harmony and yet play harmony to the melody at the same time. You can do either one. The guitar is a beaut, even though it's plucked, is a beautiful melodic instrument. And it just, with a player like Nicholas and an instrument like guitar, it really brought to the forefront that I could write something that I really wanted to write without any sort of technical parameters, except, of course, what Nicholas was saying. Well, can't play that. It's on the same string or something.
Now, you also write for film music, silent film music. How did you get into that?
I do. So that's a little bit of a funny story. I do write for silent films, very importantly to me, those silent films that for which I have written are also done in concert with live music on a regular basis, both shorts and feature-length films. But way back in 1997, I was called by the Mary Pickford Foundation and a company called Timeline Films, and they called and said they were doing a set of restored Mary Pickford silent films. Mary Pickford, of course, who was one of the four artists who began United Artists back in 1919. And Mary Pickford was also called America's Sweetheart. So for, you know, some young listeners who might not be aware of Mary Pickford, very worth looking up. She was the first woman in America ever to earn $1 million, by the way. And she created wonderful rights for all people in film, all those working in film. So that, just a little tangent there. But so Mary Pickford Foundation called me and told me what they were doing. And I said, "I film music? I think you have the wrong Newman. Perhaps you're looking for one of my brothers." And they said, no, we're looking for you. We've heard your music. We want a large chamber score, so 13 instruments or so, want a large chamber score for this particular film, Daddy Long Legs, which was 1919. It's in its centennial now. The film, of course, not my score, but the film is in its centennial year now. And so that was how I got started. And I said, the only caveat is that I'd really, as a performing concert musician, I really would like to be able to perform these in perpetuity on the concert stage. Would you be willing? And as owner of those elements and that tape, the Mary Pickford Foundation was very happy to do that, and it started our fellowship. I have a composition fellowship with them, and so it's been many films since, and I hope many more to come.
That's fantastic. I'm sure you're going to meet a lot of students at Eastman. I know there's a concerted effort here in Rochester to turn Rochester into something of a film and a video game composition hub to, you know, capitalize on the relationship with RIT. And there's so much energy around film music right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And a thriving silent film fan base here, too, at the Dryden Theater, which is closed right now for renovations. But every Tuesday night.
Exactly.
You know.
Right. Well, I hope to return and be able to perform there in the George Eastman Museum and all of that. Yeah, it's just sounds amazing. I know from the time that I was a student here, Louise Brooks, who was a very famous silent film star of her day, was still living, and I was just too young and silly not to know that she was here and what could have happened. But yes, I'm actually in residence at Eastman in, shall I say, sorry, I am in residence at Eastman as a guest of the Beale Institute. And the Beale Institute, of course, for the contemporary media, is all about what you're talking about. And so, wow, to have some connections with RIT and all of that that's going on now is amazing. Mark Waters is the head of the Beale Institute. And believe it or not, Jeff Beale and Joan Beale, for whom the institute is named, for they gave this seed money for this institute. They were my classmates here at Eastman way back when, and they live very close to me now in Los Angeles. So we have that wonderful opportunity to see each other a lot and know what they have done for what we both have loved here for all these years.
That's fantastic. Well, how does it feel to be back as, you know, the experienced woman of the world at the pinnacle of her career, you know, with a thriving creative life and everything that you've accomplished? Like, when you look at those young kids, you know, what are you going to tell them?
I loved Eastman so much. And coming back here, this is my first time back since I graduated in Rochester. I've performed at Syracuse University. It's so many places close by. And why I haven't returned to Eastman is I'm beside myself. So I am so excited to be here. And of course, being in contact with all the amazing faculty that is here now, who are now my colleagues. That seems amazing to say that they're now my colleagues, of course. And some were actually here. Benita Boyd was here when I was a student. And of course, she's a legend. J.B. Vandermark was here when I was a student. He was barely older than the students at that time. He's such a prodigy as a player and a teacher. So, but it was almost scary to come back. I almost had the feeling that I was 18 years old and back, where I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to be the worst person here. Everybody's going to be better. And what Eastman did is it created confidence and gave you room to be who you were. That's one of the greatest things about Eastman. So, believe it or not, my husband, with whom I'm traveling, his name is Scott Hossfeld, wonderful conductor and violinist, violist. He and I, in combination, and it's a much longer story than we have time to go into now, but starting with From the Top, yes.
Starting with, okay.
Yes, in cohorts with From the Top, with Christopher O'Reilly, and with Scott, who has been head of conducting and conducting studies at Idlewild Arts in California. We have now seven students who have now come to Eastman, two who are sophomores, the rest who are freshmen this year, and we're so excited that we could really let them know that Eastman, I think, would be the best place for any young musician to arrive and feel welcomed and still have enough pressure, you know, enough intensity, and yet mentorship that will make them the greatest musicians that they can be and want to be, to fulfill their dreams. So I'm very excited about that.
That's wonderful, like a positive feedback loop, you know, going back and forth. It seems like you were sort of a special case as an 18-year-old young woman from California coming into Eastman. You know, what can you put a finger on how Eastman built your confidence, you know, as a composer and a performer? Like, specifically, how did they do that?
Okay. Well, you know, I have children from 11 years old up to 23 years old. And so I've seen, two are in college at the moment. One has just graduated and is with under contract with the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. So I'm very proud of all of them. And my two younger children as well are exceptional human beings. I'm very lucky to have them in my lives and my life, have them in my life. I feel that when I came here, I had a private teacher. I had somebody who cared about me personally. It's almost like having an advisor full time. When you come in as an applied performance major, you have that relationship with that one person who you hope cares about you. I mean, you probably ought to go to a school that you're in love with the teacher with whom you're studying. I found that my two oldest girls, who are both in theater, they didn't have they succeeded greatly at their schools, but they did not have the same one-on-one that you have at music school. So, you know, you might be in a production, you bond over the production, but when you're in music school, you have this one person, then you have your chamber music coach. You have shared ideas. You have heated debate and wonderful discussions without really fear of judgment. I mean, I know in classical music, sometimes we consider that, oh, we look at all the things we're doing right, and yet we're working on the things that we're not quite doing right yet, that we're maybe still doing, I'm saying this with my fingers up in quotations, but with maybe doing wrong. And so that can be difficult. But when you have somebody backing you, and Eastman is wonderful that way. The faculty that they choose they support the students. Everybody supports each other. The comments that you get from other teachers within the school, juries are even a lovely experience. The notes that you get back from other faculty that are on the juries at the end of the year, which are like your final exams, of course, as you know, Brenda, it's really extraordinary. Also had wonderful conductors and people who really cared about you and cared about who you were as a person. It's a smaller school. I know it's growing. Eastman is now up to 900. When I was going to school here, it was 300 students. And so how could it have been any better? So to have a constant person that was there looking out for you.
So the intimacy was really, really great for you.
Exactly.
Huh, interesting. What are you really passionate about these days that you're working on currently?
Oh, so many things. But one, so I'm very blessed. I have many commissions and lots of performances and lots of tours. And I just feel very grateful to be in that position. It's a dream come true. And I hope it continues. And I feel excited about all of that. One in particular that really pertains to Rochester. I have been commissioned by the League of Women Voters of course, 1920 was when the 19th Amendment came, and women hard won that vote. We earned, our mothers and grandmothers earned that vote, and 2020, of course, is that centennial. And so on August 26th, which I believe is the day the bill was signed, et cetera, or the August 26th will be the world premiere of a piece that I am writing in honor of the 19th Amendment.
Fantastic.
So it's really going to be an exciting thing. Of course, with Susan B. Anthony, all of the things that have happened right here in Rochester, I'm going to be taking a tour of the Susan B. Anthony House, and all of this is great research. It just came at such an amazing time that I happen to be right here. It seems like it was just drawn in a script or something.
Where is that premiere happening?
That's the August 26th, 2020. That will happen, and
where?
It will take place on both in Washington D.C. and in Los Angeles. So the places that are being talked about now are the I have to say that it is the League of Women Voters Los Angeles. So I want you to know that. But at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts and Disney Hall in Los Angeles.
Congratulations.
So thank you so much. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed that it keep on going. And it will be for large symphony orchestra. There will be choir involved and some speakers. There will be some visual involved in it as well. And I think it's just going to be one of the most amazing projects I've ever had the privilege of working on. I'm very glad to be a part of this project.
Oh, that's so impactful. Mm-hmm. Two funny little things about the Susan B. Anthony House. You know, they discovered a letter under the floorboards when they were doing some renovations, a sealed letter. This was about 10 years ago. A huge speculation. It could be, you know, a lost love letter or, you know. Anyway, it turned out to be like a pie recipe. It was so boring.
But I love that. Maybe it was in code, the pie recipe.
And the other interesting thing, I was just over there a few months ago. She owns... there's a tambourine on display there that she owned. It's sort of decorative. I don't know if she played it, but you never think of Susan B. Anthony in her severe Victorian dress and her bun and her, you know, expression like whipping around with a tambourine.
I know, but all the women's suffrage songs and all of that, perhaps she was.
Maybe. I don't know.
Never know.
Or maybe someone gave it to her, as a token. Is there anything, Maria, that you want to add? I mean,
I'd love to talk just a little bit about what's happening at Eastman this week.
Oh, yeah,
if
absolutely.
I can.
Totally.
So tonight, Monday night, September the 9th, at 7 o'clock in Howard Hanson Hall, which is inside, of course, you need to walk into the Eastman Main Hall and go up to, I think it's on the fourth floor, and a lovely intimate setting where I will be discussing and performing on a subject called Breaking Through the Newman Shadow, which, of course, is the family I've been talking about. And the subtitle is Creating Your Unique Path in Music. And so that'll be tonight at 7 p.m. And then on Wednesday, I will be performing in Simonelli Lounge. I really hope I'm pronouncing that right. I've heard there's a controversy between Chi and Si. It's a very funny story. But anyway, this is in the Student Life Building, I believe. And that will be performing several silent shorts to with live music, to picture. And And that's, believe it starts at 10:30. That concert begins at 10:30 and conversation.
And that's open and to the public too.
It is open to the public. And because it goes over sort of two class periods, if audience wanted to come, if they couldn't come at 10:30, they could also arrive at 11:30 or sometime in the middle. So it will be informal and all audiences welcome, of course. And then, of course, the Wednesday evening, September 11th, same day as the film. And that's, by the way, that's called the Newmans of Hollywood. So that will be that morning, September 11th. But in the evening, September 11th, is this called In Remembrance in Hatch Hall concert. It's a formal concert, but it is all dedicated and will to, you know, courage, heroism, hope for the future, as we were talking about earlier. And also will feature sort of a through composed concert where we will have a lot of music intermingled that has to do with the very subjects upon which I was speaking a moment ago. And then finally, of course, Nicholas Galoussis's faculty recital, which is Thursday, September 12th at 7:30. That's also in Hatch Hall. And this is where, of course, my piece, both nights, the guitar piece will be performed. So if somebody can't come hear that guitar piece on Thursday, they can come on Wednesday, or please come to both. All are welcome.
Well, I know the faculty and administrators at Eastman are thrilled that you're there, and our audience is certainly going to be thrilled to hear some of your music and hear you speaking about your fascinating life. So thank you so much for taking time to talk with us.
Oh, Brenda, thank you so much. I'm very, very honored to be here. I